I don't understand why Cupid was chosen to represent Valentine's Day. When I think about romance, the last thing on my mind is a short, chubby toddler coming at me with a weapon.
Welcome to Gay Talk 2.0, the ultimate podcast for your dose of dish.
All right, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of Gay Talk 2.0, the ultimate podcast, streaming live on Digital Stream Radio, where you can listen to that live stream every Monday at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time by visiting digitalstreamradio.com.
With the exception of tonight, right?
Yes, thank you. Anyway, on today's show, we are joined by the great Dr. Evan Goldstein for this month's installment of Tales from the Tale, with Meth Addiction, Sex and Relationships Take Center Stage for this month's topic, all this on the second half of the show. My name is Tom, and I am your host, and as always, I'm here with my incredible, amazing, sometimes crazy co-host, starting with the first one.
Hey, y'all. Nick, or Trish.
And...
good to be with you guys. It's Chris.
And welcome you all to...
The Dish.
All right, so... I can tell you it's already been a very, very interesting evening, to say the least, but we're going to jump right into one of the first things that we want to talk about today, and that's, of course, our cocktail, our suggested cocktail for today. So, Christopher, why don't you tell us what we're having?
Because we have all deserved and earned a drink after the days that we went through today.
We woke up. That is enough.
It's been a crazy week.
Yes, surely it has, of course. So today's signature suggested cocktail, I'm kind of upset that we weren't able to actually make it today because this is a really good-sounding cocktail.
Somebody didn't do a liquor run.
That's all right. That's all right. As we know, this coming Thursday is going to be Valentine's Day.
That's right.
So today,
the worst day of the year.
And you are appropriately dressed in red for it.
Perfect. So,
with his Canada shirt.
Our signature cocktail today is the Cupid's Mule. It sounds really good. Probably a little on the sweeter side, but...
describe it to me, baby.
Absolutely. So, it consists of 1 to 1.5 ounces... or one... yes, 1 to 1.5 ounces of vodka.
Wow. Just use as much as you want.
A lot of vodka. 1 ounce elderflower liqueur, a splash of lime juice, some fresh ice, and 1 bottle of pink ginger beer, and you want some sliced strawberries for garnish. So you start the build the cocktail, you pour the vodka. Shut up, Trish. I've been doing nothing but reading all day. My eyes are broken. You start by pouring the vodka, the elderflower liqueur, and a splash of fresh lime juice into a cocktail shaker over ice. Shake it vigorously.
Drink.
Then strain into a stemless champagne flute, because we fancy like that. You want to go ahead and top that off after with pink ginger beer, and then garnish with some freshly sliced strawberries.
Yummy.
Enjoy. Sounds delicious. It on your own. Because you don't need no man.
You don't need a man. You don't need a woman. You need yourself.
You don't even need a penis nowadays.
Well, take it easy. Yeah. Pump those brakes. When you did the opener, it reminded me, you guys never watched The Office, did you?
We always go through this with
him. I know. I feel like I've
The Office. What's the other one?
Family Guy.
Uh-huh. Well, I love one episode. It's a Valentine's Day one, and Michael Scott's like, "I got hit with Cupid's sparrow." Funny little bird. You know, like his arrow.
Again, his not funny.
It's so funny. It's getting a little dry in here.
Crazy people, I'm telling you.
Not even a fucking chuckle. I hate you too.
Well, that's why I love this show.
I mean, I laughed after I talked.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That was just so funny.
And then everybody else did, too, so.
Yeah. We were laughing at you, not with you.
I mean, that's my life, though.
Oh, Lord have mercy. Well, welcome back, boys. It's another week, another show. I'm super excited because, you know, Dr. G, of course, is just, he's so dreamy to look at.
Try having a minute.
I am so... so jealous
to come.
I'm so jealous that you guys got to meet him in person when you guys went down to see him.
Me too.
All right, well, boys, how have you been? Christopher, why don't we just throw it over your way? How have you been? How was your week since we last met on the show?
It's been busy, as expected.
Yeah. Because you're now back in school, full-fledged.
Oh, yeah, full-fledged. Like, you know,
but one less class, which is good.
Yes, but one of my classes is a science lab class. Uh-huh. So I am taking three-credit classes and 1 4-credit class.
Are you going to dissect a frog?
I don't believe so. But I think we might be working with, like, hearts and lungs. And it's human biology, so we're learning all about, you know, the body from the eyeballs to the anus. We're learning about it all.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So it's getting very difficult now. It's getting busy. A lot to remember. Oh. And statistics is starting to get hard.
Well,
not only did they...
Your recent experience, I hope that you know you take notes on anus.
I take notes on everything. You know what's so annoying, though? I got pissed off when they put letters in math. Now they're putting Greek letters in math. I got to learn a whole other alphabet. It's a pain in the fucking ass. Anyway, the one thing I really wanted to talk about was what I did this Saturday. I surprised my friend Lindsay. We grew up together. Well, she moved to Windsor Locks in seventh grade, and we hit it off right away. We became best friends. I even lived with her and her mom for about a year in high school, and we were wicked close. And she recently got engaged, and her mom was talking to me. Her mom flew up from Florida, and Lindsay had no idea that I was coming there. So I'm like searching for her apartment in New York, like in kind of like not really upstate, near Poughkeepsie. And I finally, like, I'm stumbling outside the place, not drunk stumbling. I'm just like stumbling around the place. And she just gets out the car and she's like, "Who the fuck are you? What the fuck are you doing here?" Had no idea that I was showing up to be with her for her engagement party.
So all these Snapchats that you were sending with that dog.
Oh my God, whose dog
was that?
That's Lindsay's dog.
Oh, Fitz is going to be so jealous.
He was
so mad at you.
Adorable. He was so much fun. I love getting hammered and playing with animals.
Well, you just love getting hammered, period. But
facts.
That's a whole different story.
On the second half of the show, we're going to talk about addiction.
So get all your yucks out of the way now.
So, well, that's cool. So you did that Saturday, and how were you Sunday? Dead?
Actually, my ass was in my car driving home at 7:15 in the morning.
Stop it.
Mm-hmm. And then I went home and I did some homework.
I'm proud of you.
And then she was dead.
And then I was dead. I was pretty much spent the day watching Chopped, wanting to vomit the whole day. But you know what? I got my work done. I did what I had to do.
I'm proud of you.
And my ass was up and ready to go to class today.
So Tom calls me on Sunday, and I'm like, I'm not picking that up yet.
Like, it is only 3 in the afternoon. I'm sleeping.
No, it was like 11.
No, I called you around 1 p.m., I think. And she was like, well, I got to get ready, and I got to take a shower before I leave the house. She showed up like around 3:30, 4 o'clock.
Well, you know, numbers are hard for Nick. 1 + 1 = 11.
All right, no, he's right. It was 1 o'clock.
Oh, my God.
It was 12:52.
Say that again.
It was 12:52.
It was 12:52.
That's one.
So I don't know.
Actually, without going over. Sorry.
I was cooking something to eat, and I see him calling me, and I'm like, no, not picking it up. And then I called him back, and he's like, hey, Can you come over and help me with moving some shit out of my spare room down to the basement? I was like,
no.
No, I was like, So I proceeded to watch a couple shows. And then I took a shower and got ready and went over and helped him out.
And then he came over, and then he ate because my mama cooked.
So good.
Mom, she cooked tonight, so I hope you brought an appetite. She's got some food up there.
Yes.
It's so good.
Yes. I want some pernil.
Well, she didn't make pernil, but she did make a pollo en fricasse.
Oh, yeah, that. I mean, it's not a thing, but I'll try it.
It is. It's amazing and delicious. So trust me when I tell you, it's delicious. So anyway, but he came over, he had a bite to eat, and then we moved everything very quickly, and then we just proceeded to just veg.
So we tried to take a nap.
Yeah.
And because then we both had to work.
Yes, and then I snored, and he couldn't sleep. But it was fun.
Sounds exciting.
Yeah.
It sounds like a blast. I'm so jealous.
We're laying on the couch and I'm like, he needs one of those masks. What are they called when they
put it over your eyes?
No. Like
like a sleep apnea mask?
Yes. I'm like laying on the couch. I'm like, Tom, are you breathing?
Well, there's
Tom.
Did I stop breathing?
You know what I'm talking about. Yes. We've all been in bed with somebody like that.
Wow, she's really throwing all her business out there, but go ahead.
Well, I have, yeah.
Yeah, good.
No, you've never been in bed with somebody like that?
No.
I napped next to Tommy one time. I know what you're talking about.
People don't sleep.
I literally dated somebody where he would stop breathing, and it would scare me, wake me up, and I would shake him.
No, I don't get to that point. As soon as you come, your Uber's already waiting.
Oh, no, occasionally.
You don't even get a shower. Here's a towel, wipe up, go.
No, but like it got to the point in the relationship where it was just like, Hello.
I can't sleep with people. I can only sleep with my dogs. I sleep with people
because when you wake up with them,
it can be fun.
I call them back.
Second time. Mm-hmm. Fourth time.
Just don't breathe in my face, please.
No, I call them back. I'm like, did you shower? You can come back now. You want me to send an Uber? Yeah. No. They got to go.
Well, at least you pay for the Uber.
Mm. Well, no. I call that's, them isn't, one.
That's like paying for sex,
but
then,
when they're leaving... When they're leaving, they pay for their own Uber or go in your own car and go home.
But if you're ordering an Uber for someone to come to your house,
that means he's having sex on his own terms.
Exactly. I'm owning my sexuality.
Yeah. Mm. That just means, like, that was great. Car's waiting.
Yeah, you got to go.
Capitalism. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's good stuff. It's good stuff.
No, but I mean, overall, it's been a very crazy week. So, cat's out of the bag. You guys know that I have been mentioning for quite a few episodes that Grandma wasn't doing well. Mm-hmm. She had not been for a while. And unfortunately, last Wednesday, we lost her. And she is now in heaven with her little angel wings watching all over us. But, you know, for me, it was just like, wow. So the whole experience is lethargic because I have experienced loss before of close people in my life, but never to the point where you have to actually be involved in the decision making of what happens. Mm-hmm. Holy shit. Yo, let me tell you, there's nothing worse than dealing with family and money
when it comes
to death.
When it comes to death, absolutely.
Holy shit. So, you know, it was a very, very emotional but also beautiful experience, right? Because we got to keep her home. Grandma didn't want to be in the hospital. She didn't want to go to hospice. So we brought hospice to the house. So we had a bed for her. We had the oxygen tank and the machines and everything that she needed was there, medication. And so we kept her home. So we kept her home and comfortable until she was able to just ease into letting go. And she went. Holy shit. That's all I'm going to say about that, because me even just mentioning that alone will probably start another war.
It's so true.
It's crazy.
And I don't mean this in a morbid way, but I've thought about this before because I have seen it. I had seen it. Sometimes the people who lucked out were the ones who went away, because they don't have to deal with such like feuds that literally tear people's mm-hmm. like families apart. Like, you're all trying to get together to honor, in your instance, like the matriarch of the family.
That's right. I mean, my grandmother had 16 kids, 9 that are living. Mm-hmm. And
he showed me his family tree.
You would think that...
How old are you, Tommy?
Shut up.
Wait, anyway, is that the tree that was stolen from out front when Trish was watching your house?
See, she keeps...
So the positive in this story is the fact that he showed me his family tree, and it showed his birth year on the family tree.
But it's the fake one, and I keep telling him, right? He sees that
birthday.
It's
definitely not the fake one.
It's all right, I can math.
So anyway.
No, it's Ancestry.com. It's not the fake one.
It is, because I don't want to put all my information on that website. But anyway, so it was just weird. It was just weird. Nick, I see you voguing over there. Nasty little queen. But it was just weird. The whole thing was weird. So anyway, Mom is still in town. Mom is actually here at home. She's upstairs, and
I've yelled at her twice.
He did.
That's not nice.
Yeah.
Right? She keeps making food. I keep eating it.
Uh-huh.
I'm like, I don't want...
And there's more upstairs, so he's just going to get... Fuck her.
Yeah, right?
Not Mom.
Yeah,
her,
exactly.
This one, she just called me obese.
I mean, you took it there.
I'm offended, but not really.
I'm offended,
because
too.
I'm eating all that food anyway. Oh. No, so Mom's here, and she's cooking, and, you know, she just loves to cook. I mean, I swear that woman has
She's good at it.
She has magic in her fingers. It's just there. But anyway, so just to wrap up the whole thing in the week, it's just, if you can, here's my piece of advice. If you lose someone, if you can avoid at all cost having to be part of any of the decision-making, you are going to save yourself such a headache and alleviate yourself from such craziness.
But the thing is, a lot of people won't be able to do that. So
no, a lot of people won't
especially
have the
as they get older.
To, but yeah. I didn't have to. Grandma had 9 kids. I didn't have to, but I interjected myself because my mother was so to the point where she couldn't function because of her grief. So I had to sort of kind of step in for her and say, this is what I think we should do, XYZ. And things just...
And I sort of disagree with you a little bit. I feel like, don't get me wrong, I think you have a beautiful and amazing family, but I also think that there are...
You haven't met them. You just met my mom and a couple of people on my family.
So the people that I've met in your family, I enjoy, and I think that they're great.
It's a facade.
But I also think that you hold a position in your family that a lot of people don't. And I think you tend to take charge because a lot of people can't. And I think that's something that you should be proud of.
Well, I tend to take charge because some things piss me off and I'm just like, no, we're not doing that. Move. That's sort of kind of me. Like, right. Get out of my way.
It can be a burden, but I see what you're saying, Nick.
But anyway, the experience in itself was just very surreal, but grandma's passing was just beautiful and very, the experience in itself to just watch someone come to the end and pass so peacefully was very, it's something that I'm very happy that I experienced. Because now I've come full circle. I've seen my grandmother in her best years. I've seen my grandmother transitioning into her older life. Grandma was over 90 years plus. So, you know, she lived a very long life. So to see that whole evolution from when I can recall as at my youngest self, seeing her and experiencing her to the day that she left us, it was just very, very, it was almost like lethargic in a way. But it was amazing and beautiful. So I'm glad that I got
cathartic
to experience
it. Cathartic or lethargic?
Lethargic in the sense that, you know, it's like cathartic. I would
you
say
meant cathartic.
No,
yeah.
I would say lethargic in the sense that you don't really realize what's going on, right? When everything is happening in front of you and you sort of kind of have to like, you have like this outer body experience because you're seeing everything and
so
everyone. And you become like numb.
I know. I've been there.
The whole thing of emotion, right? And you just literally sit back and I'm not one to cry. So I don't experience emotions the same way most of my family does. And so I just sit back and lean against the wall and just watch them. And I'm just like, ooh, that's messy, girl. Yeah, you don't want to do that. But I keep it to myself, you know. But in the end, it was beautiful. But she did leave us. And now we're just going to have to deal with the aftermath. So pretty crazy. But anyway.
That being said, though, I do have to say that on your Facebook page, there is a GoFundMe for your grandmother because you are planning to send her back to Puerto Rico for her burial.
That's right.
And you have a lot of support from our friends in our community locally, but
that's right.
Putting it out to our listeners that they have to send grandma back.
Yeah.
And if you wanted to.
You can help. I mean, the page initially was set up so that it could facilitate family members that are not here in Connecticut to be able to donate that way and get their funding in if they wanted to help, like my aunt and uncle's kids and children and their children, because, I mean, she has seen grandchildren, great-grandchildren,
I've seen your family
and great-grandchildren. So it's a lot. And so... But friends also contribute it. But yeah, it's there. So,
and you know, we have a local community here that takes care of each other. But since this podcast has started, we branched out a community and we've touched people from across
That's
the
right.
United States, from across the entire
world.
Globe. Yeah. So we really are a community that needs to work together and always, you know, be there to help someone when they're either down or just need. It's like a little, hey, how you doing? Always reach out.
Yeah.
Thank you. But anyway. That's that. That was my week in a nutshell. And then I went back to work today and they weren't expecting me. They were like, we thought you weren't going to be here this week. I'm like, why? Why would I not be? Because they sent flowers to the house thinking that I was going to be home all day. And then I was at work and the flowers were being delivered. And the guy's calling me. He's like, you got a package. I just left it.
Meanwhile, some Tommy's like, flowers outside.
Meanwhile, Tommy's like, I went to MAL last week. So I need to like, you know. Catch up on my, I don't want to use all my PTO.
But that wasn't last week.
No, that was like 2 weeks ago.
Like 2 weeks ago. Yeah, I went to Mr. Atlantic Leather. That was it's like a complete opposite of the whole situation.
Yeah, at this point, he's definitely gone through his course of antibiotics. Like, he should be all right.
I am not a certain
You're the
somebody.
Reason those things aren't working anymore.
I am not Val who shall not be named on this show. I don't need antibiotics. Thank you very much. Sorry. But anyway, we have stories. Nick, why don't you tell us about something that you suggested earlier today?
That's for the second half. But I can do that now if you want.
Well, no, because we were the second half is Dr. Evan Goldstein.
No, I mean like closing out the show. Yeah. We were gonna do that review in 60 seconds.
So. Okay, so you want to do that? So you have stories. Well, why don't we jump into stories? Do you want to go first, or should you go first?
I got this.
All right. Well, we're gonna kick it off to Christopher on this side.
Yeah,
go for it.
So as we know, the Supreme Court of the United States of America has ruled to allow Trump's ban on transgender men and women serving in the military while it goes to the lower courts again, while they continue the battle in the lower courts, and they're allowing this to happen. Now there is a bipartisan bill being introduced at a time when we need bipartisanship more than ever, when it's such a deadlock of partisan frustration and selfishness, where we have another government shutdown looming. We have a deadline on Friday, or the government's going to shut down again, and thousands and thousands and thousands will be furloughed or working without pay.
But this was introduced in the Senate, right?
Correct.
Okay.
There also is a House bill, I believe. So I got this from The Advocate. Three senators, Kirsten Gillibrand of New York, Susan Collins of Maine, and Jack Reed, I think he's Rhode Island, have introduced legislation to protect transgender military members from discharge and to allow new enlistments by trans Americans. And as we know,
there are four. Did you say four or three?
Three.
Joseph Kennedy.
That's the House.
House.
Oh, okay.
These are the three senators that are starting, but there is a House bill. Kirsten Gillibrand, like I said, a Democrat of New York. Susan Collins, the Republican of Maine, and she's a sensible woman. And Jack Reed, I believe he's a Democrat of.
Did you just call Susan Collins a sensible woman?
She has had some sense.
This is the same woman that voted for Brett Kavanaugh.
I know. I didn't say I agree with her. I didn't say I agree with her. But remember, she was one of the. She was also one of the ones that was sided with McCain. Mm-hmm. Many times.
Well, to save healthcare.
The healthcare, yes. Exactly. Because she knows that the citizens of Maine need that.
Yeah, I don't know. This woman is selectively progressive when she wants to be, but then when it really counts.
I wouldn't say progressive. I would say moderate.
She's selectively moderate, okay. But then when she needs to actually come through for the American people, she just dodges behind a fucking rock somewhere up there in Maine where she belongs. And then, you know, she just doesn't come through.
She's dodging behind the heroes who wear our flag on their shirt, mm-hmm, and defend us every single day. So she's dodging in the right direction for this one. The legislation comes a few weeks after the Supreme Court ruled that Donald Trump's ban is going to go in effect, and that is a bipartisan bill. And yes, there was one also, as Nick was pointing out, in the House of Representatives. Congresswoman Jackie Speier of California has introduced companion legislation in the House with Representatives Joe Kennedy, John Katko, Susan Davis, and Anthony Brown. So now this is at another point where, like I said, such partisan politics are happening, and it's been going on for years now. It started forever ago, but it's been very bad even throughout the Obama administration.
It's Cheney's fault, really. Cheney's the one that started that whole, you know, us against them and pushed it. And as a result, that's what we've got.
Are you talking about Dick Cheney?
That's right.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
Penis Cheney.
Who's going to listen to a guy who shot his friend in the face? Like, come on, people. I think he shot him in the ass. But regardless, that's not the guy I'm going to listen to. But the bill, according to the press release from Gillibrand, would express a sense of Congress that anyone who is qualified and can meet the standards to serve in the military should be eligible to serve. And the Trump administration's discriminatory keyword ban and policies are inconsistent with this goal. Prohibit the Department of Defense from involuntarily separating or denying the reenlistment or continuation of service in the armed forces of currently serving transgender members solely on the basis of their gender identity.
And you know, this is amazing, right, that they're taking this initiative, but I have one big huge concern.
Timing?
No. What happens when it lands on the president's desk for him to sign it?
Goes back and they vote again.
They need to make sure that this is a veto-proof bill. They need a supermajority in both the House and the Senate for this to really have any real chance of actually becoming actual legislation that passes and becomes law.
Well, since the midterms happened, not even halfway through the night where the results were starting to roll in, Donald Trump opened his drawer and pulled out that veto pen. He was ready. He was like, well, fuck, I got defeated. Now I have to veto everything.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, and chances are that's what he's going to do. But it's like, I hope that the people that are spearheading this endeavor to ensure that our military is inclusive of mm-hmm. members of the LGBT, specifically the transgender community, in order for something like this to go through, it's going to need to really, really have the support, a very large support internally. And honestly, I don't think they have it in the Senate, because right now the Senate is, the majority is Republican.
Right.
They may not, I mean, this may not work. That concerns me.
This is very true. I mean, if you look at LGB, mm-hmm. They went through their struggles in the military with Don't Ask, Don't Tell.
That's right.
And they overcame that. We overcame that together. Mm-hmm. We as Americans overcame that. And yes, of course, this is now directed solely at the transgender community, these heroes who are putting their lives on the line every day to protect our nation. And I just, it is difficult to think with a Senate controlled by the Republicans that something like this can get passed. Or if it would get passed, would be able to have a supermajority should it be sent back.
Yeah, because my thing is I want to remain optimistic, and something like this would be amazing for our brothers and sisters in that part of our community. But it's just, you know, given the way the temperature is right now in this country and how legislation is being bounced back and forth and used as collateral for a fucking wall,
mm-hmm.
Can end up, you know, putting some of these people in the crosshairs.
Right.
It's just sad.
I agree.
So I hope, I really truly hope that this ends up being something that we see come to fruition.
I hope so too. And I feel like the timing is interesting because it was February 7th, which means, like I said, we are now looming. We just got over the longest shutdown in U.S. history. And the way it's looking now is we're doomed to beat that record again.
And we're past at this point. You know, it's not like Nancy could again deny him the ability to have his stage.
State of the Union, yeah.
Because he already had it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but also, I don't really necessarily think it was her. I think what had happened was the airport started shutting down and people couldn't travel. That's why Trump was pushed to actually end the shutdown.
No, and you make a good point, but had the party in the House not held...
Oh,
strong,
yeah, you're right. You're
not
right.
Providing a border and that, wall funding.
And that was one step in the process. Yeah. But the fact that the airport started shutting down on the entire East Coast and West Coast,
right.
He had no choice.
And Chris Murphy came out today and he said, now Donald Trump is holding the American people hostage over funding for a border wall that the House is never going to give him.
He's holding the American people hostage for everything.
Yeah, absolutely. Which ever since hijacking the government.
The Supreme Court even pushed this fucking through, this trans military ban, is ridiculous to me. Mm-hmm. Like, blows my mind. You just passed marriage equality, and now you're going to put this through? Like, what the fuck?
Well, it's important to understand that the Supreme Court did not rule.
It wasn't a ruling.
On the validity of to whether or not it was constitutional or unconstitutional. What they did is they lifted a stay of a lower court order, mm-hmm. allowing that lower court order to go through while the other lawsuits that are currently happening in lower courts make their way to the Supreme Court. There's a lot more to this than that one issue that went up, the transgender ban.
But why did they even lift it?
Because now they have a conservative majority there. Mm-hmm. They're going to let him go with this. The reason, I think marriage equality is here to stay, but when you look at the wording of that ruling, Obergefell versus, I forget the second name of it. That's terrible. Anyway, when you look at the ruling, I believe the ruling didn't state that the United States, every state.
Hodges,
thank you. That every state must offer marriage equality. I believe the wording was that it is unconstitutional mm-hmm. to ban marriage equality. So there's a difference there. And I think with the interpretation of that, because remember, the Constitution is a living document. It's something that grows as we grow. We grow alongside of it, and it grows alongside of us. And now with this majority going on there, this conservative majority, mm-hmm. you're going to start seeing more of these religious freedom laws going through. Look at the Baker cake case. That's like hard words. But if you look at what's going on, this is going to start becoming more and more relevant, especially with this Supreme Court letting it go back to the lower courts.
Well, it's interesting that you say that, because just recently there was a ruling regarding abortions. that actually was that John Roberts was the actual deciding vote, and therefore, as a result, he sided with
the liberal
judges, and it pushed back against one of the states that was
Texas.
Was it Texas?
I think it was Texas.
That was trying to make abortion even that much more difficult in that state.
They had one of the laws that they were putting into effect was that you needed to be able to have the facilities or the care that a hospital could offer in your clinic. They couldn't afford it.
That's
they
right.
made it to where people would have to drive hundreds of miles, but then even if you got approved for getting the abortion, you couldn't get it for another 24 hours, so you would have to leave, drive 250 miles back, and then chances are you're not going to be able to afford to go back there.
That's right.
So they were doing everything they could to get around the legality of abortion.
Just like they did with voting rights, you know, back in the 40s, 50s, 60s, before we had the civil rights movement.
Can we go back to what you were saying about the fact that, what did you think they said about marriage equality?
I think the wording was that it's unconstitutional to ban marriage equality.
No, they ruled that the fundamental right to marry is guaranteed to same-sex couples.
Well, invalidating. We talked about it, and we were talking about it in American government today, and that's what...
They invalidated DACA.
DOMA, Defense of Marriage Act.
Why did I think DACA, which is very important, by the way?
Indeed it is.
But it's DOMA.
DOMA
was invalidated.
But DOMA was invalidated before the marriage equality was passed at the Supreme Court.
Well, it was part of that. There was three lawsuits.
Yeah, and DOMA got knocked down before Obergefell versus Hodges.
So, well, touche.
Look at that.
She's nasty. We're going to have to fact check her, though.
I wasn't listening.
So, anyway. All right. So, this is awesome. I salute Gillibrand and, of course, these other senators.
Collins and Reed.
I don't know about Susan Collins.
She's putting her name on the bill.
Susan.
Have we all really been recording for an hour and 9 minutes, or is that on top of?
No, that's on top of.
Okay.
So.
Oh.
We've been on air for 35 minutes.
Okay, I was just like, where have I been? Wake up!
She's been in space. All right, so we've got two more stories, and of course, they're Nick, so I'm going to throw it over to him. Thank you, Christopher, for keeping us apprised of what's going on in our trans community.
These aren't really stories. They're just more statements.
Okay.
Because we can't talk about these like we talk about politics, because I'm the only gay one on the show sometimes.
Lies.
So we had talked about the show before, but Disney had created a character that was supposed to embody what a gay character would be. But finally, on the Disney Channel, somebody actually said out loud, "I'm gay."
That's awesome,
and it was pretty amazing. So I'm going to play a little clip.
Of course, he is.
Mm-hmm. Hello.
I'm waiting.
It's not my internet.
She's never prepared.
Oh, shit.
This is Andrew Hees Kugel. That's your classic bagel and lox. That's gefilte fish. Skip that. And I'm gay.
Yes!
Yeah? Okay, cool.
So what's so amazing about this whole thing is that Disney Channel's for kids, right? So I used to watch the Disney Channel.
Same.
And this moment where he was just like having a moment, he's like, I gotta say this, I gotta come out and say that I'm gay. And he's just like being like, all right, well, we're at this thing and I'm trying to explain to everybody what all these things are. And then he's just like, fuck it, I'm gay. And everybody just looked at him like,
okay.
And like all of these kids that watch the Disney Channel finally get to see somebody say something that's so hard to say out loud.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's so powerful. And it's such a moment for any individual to say out loud and see it and have people react in a positive way.
Because the Disney Channel is so impactful for so many people. You know, it's inspiring to see these characters.
Some
kids like strive to be some of these people that they see in there. Obviously, always be yourself, but seeing a major network like this.
But these reactions are also generational, right? Because...
Oh, totally.
When you think about...
You wouldn't have seen this when we were kids.
No. When you think about 2-3 generations ago, the whole premise about protecting children from the gay world was very prominent in parents, right? It's like, you can't be that. That's wrong. That's a sin, et cetera, et cetera.
And that's also... I think it's also really hard to compare because during the time when we grew up...
Uh-huh.
Not necessarily you, Tom.
She's nasty.
But during the time when we grew up, there was the AIDS crisis. And when I came out, my parents thought I was going to die. Do you know what I mean?
Well, that's
and
what I'm
that's
saying.
Not the case anymore.
So as generations pass, you went from it being a sin to you going to die to, you know, when millennials started and having children, their children were like, I don't care. It's like because their parents, the attitude of millennials really had an important part. They played an important part in how young people are reacting to people coming out today.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's beautiful to see how we're progressing in the right direction. And I think that a generation from now, a generation from them, we're going to be at a completely different crossroads. I think that as a community, we're going to be at a point in where we're going to have to deal with less bullshit that we deal with today or even dealt with 15, 20 years ago.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, it's we're moving in the right direction, but nonetheless, that path is still hard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's totally hard. But all I have, that's the point of the story is there has never been a show like this for children,
right.
For kids, where somebody says, yeah, there have been characters that played gay roles, but mm-hmm. there's never been a moment where somebody said, I'm gay.
Thank you, millennials.
With the fear that I could lose everything by saying this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that moment in itself was just so powerful and important for the youth of America.
I want to hear Ellen's reaction to that.
Yeah. No, we'll find out. I'm sure, because I'm sure she'll have something to do with bringing this individual
right.
to her show.
Yeah.
So. Awesome. So what's the other thing you have, mister? Of course.
We can just, let's just go
for
a break.
Go for it.
All right, fine. All right, so cheerleading.
Cheerleading.
Yeah, so we have the first out male gay cheerleader on a national team coming out being a role model for individuals. He performed at the Super Bowl, which was amazing. And there's an article.
The performance, not the Super Bowl.
Valid. He actually performed on the losing team. But on his flight home, he was crying, not because his team lost, but because everything he went through as a child, being bullied and having to switch schools because he was bullied so badly about his sexuality. He performed on a national stage as a male cheerleader and as a role model for not only the youth of America, but for all homosexuals who have been a cheerleader or want to dance or have an aspiration to do something that he did. And he did it as an out, proud gay man.
And it's beautiful and it's amazing. And I think we have a mutual acquaintance that also is or has been involved with cheerleading. Either squads, we should consider.
I would love to have him on the show.
Reach out and say, hey, what has been your experience from, you know, from your inception or the beginning of your career? Because mm-hmm. he made a career out of it.
Yep.
You know, it's amazing.
So that was really, I mean, they were just two really powerful moments that showcase and spotlight positive
LGBTQ
movement,
stories and
positive forward movement within our community that I felt were necessary to share on the show today.
That's awesome.
Not much to talk about, just something to clock and be happy about.
It's beautiful. That's amazing. So thank you for sharing that with us, and congrats to both of these amazing young stars and amazing examples of what it is to be a part of the LGBT community today. We're going to take a break. We're going to leave you with some music. And when we come back, we're going to wrap this up and bring it home.
If you need my hands to pull you up above the show you just how much you're worth, 'cause we need to be loved. So we need to be loved. If I had you here, I'd wear your heart.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. That was the incredible Anthony Starbo with We Need to Be Loved. And as always, joining us every month, as he always does, is the incredible Dr. Evan Goldstein for this month's installment of Tales from the Tale. Welcome to the show, Dr. G.
Oh, thank you. Thank you guys for having me. How are you?
We are wonderful. You know, it's been quite the interesting 4 weeks since we last seen you on this beautiful screen that we have in front of us. And look, he's all smiles.
That's because we saw him in his office.
Yes, exactly.
So Nick and I were going through some of the Medium blog posts that you have on your blog. It's medium.com/ Dr. Evan Goldstein. You can see all of his blogs there. And we constantly talk about all these posts that you do and the situations that some of your patients find themselves in, and then, of course, your take on the situation. But we came across a very interesting one that was actually posted on your site this time around, and it talks about the coming clean about meth, right? That's the title of the actual post itself. But it talks about one's addiction and coming out of that addiction and then trying to find a place in where you can actually engage someone that you care about sexually without the expectation or expecting what it was that you would feel like when you were a drug user and no longer are.
And preemptively too, as well, I just want to say out loud that this this conversation, it's going to be heavy. It's not going to be an easy one, but it's an important one to have. And so here we go. So Dr. G, so tell us a little bit about this blog post and about this patient.
Yeah. So, this was more heavy because I watched A Beautiful Boy with Timothée Chalamet. Yeah. And it was, I was so taken aback by the movie in and of itself, because I think that, we always see movies and kind of plays portraying the individual going through the trials and tribulations of the drug addiction, but yet we never really see how much it truly affected so many other people, specifically the dad, obviously, that was played by Steve Carell. I mean, I think it was just super, super amazing. And then this led me into this one story of a client of mine.
But that being said, though, so after I read your blog post, I watched the movie. Yeah. And I knew I was going to watch the movie at some point, but this specific blog made me watch the movie. And I had to pause it several times and walk away. Yes. It was so hard to watch and watch what this family was going through and what this individual was going through. It was a really powerful connection that you made in the blog post to use that movie and this story to intermesh what we're talking about today.
And I mean, I think, the client came to me, first of all, crystal is so huge in our community. I mean, it's rampant. It's everywhere. It does not discriminate, right? It purely takes people into many amazing, amazing places, especially sexually. Mm-hmm. But then obviously it changes, the mind and the brain in such a way that the addiction is just something that you just cannot get over. And I think it's specifically hit home when I see a client that comes to me, and I've known him for a while, on and off the addiction, and finally now a couple of years clean. But I think it's so interesting, especially him being in sex parties and being the bottom and receiving, to then off of the the substance, to now try and figure out how he can enjoy actually anal intercourse again. And I think it wound up being such an enormous, enormous anxiety, and that's what brought him in to see me, which was more of, hey, can you just tell me that my ass is like fine? How does it look? How does it function? What are the issues that, that did I do damage when I was in this state? Obviously, you're in this such a huge, huge euphoric state that you don't necessarily feel pain or have issues associated with that. So was there warts that were there? What was my muscle like from a functional perspective? So all these things, though, knowing that his hesitation was more mental.
Yeah.
Of that we really needed to work on the mental piece to figure out, because there is no way on a sexual front that he is ever going to feel the same sexual pleasures that he felt when he was on meth. There's no way. It's just not going to happen.
So I definitely want to dive into why that is, but I also want to go back a little bit. So luckily, your patient, he didn't have too much damage. He was okay moving forward. Do you want to talk a little bit about his consultation and what happened afterwards?
Yeah. I mean, I think that, you know, I think it's a stepwise progression, right? And obviously there's steps that you go through from an addiction perspective. And then this is just one of those added steps, which is how do you kind of formulate new relationships that are solid, that allow you to get to what you want in life, but obviously does not steer you into negative ramifications, right? And the discussions that we had is taking the ass off the table, because the ass itself literally was totally fine. It looked pretty. It looked appropriate. It did what it needed to do. And now it was more of, you know, he finally found somebody that he was dating. He finally was able to get into somewhat of an appropriate environment. He had spoken and opened up in terms of his addiction, and feels like this is a supportive individual, and that they do want to enjoy sexually different frontiers. Right. And this is one of them. And you can imagine, you know, not bottoming after you've been so fucked up for so many years, and now trying to figure out, okay, like, it's starting all over again.
Right.
So my understanding throughout this whole thing is that his concern wasn't really a physical one. It was more of a mental one. It was his inability to believe that he could go through the whole situation, the whole sexual situation, without the feeling that he wouldn't be satisfied or satisfy his partner because of the feeling that he got when he was doing it while on meth.
I think it was a combination. I mean, I think it was a validity of that, like, you know, look, you went through a really shitty time in life and now you're coming out of it. And here I am to validate that from an anal perspective, you are ready to roll. Everything is functional. It's appropriate. So I think taking anal off the table, it was more of like, okay, giving him the understanding that indeed he can engage anally, and that there is nothing holding him back from a physical perspective that should be causing these issues. Now, I think it's part of that process, which he needed to hear somebody say, hey, man, you're okay. Like, this is awesome. I'm so proud of you. 2 years clean, you've met somebody, let's now figure out how do we get you back from a bottoming perspective. Especially, it complicates too, the guy that he was dating was more of a top in the relationship. So it was like, I want to make this work, yet I now am confronting all of these issues before, where that was like part and parcel with my meth use.
Right.
So now it's like, you know, how do I go back into that positioning? Mm-hmm. Into that world, knowing that it was in such a fucked up time in my life.
So when we decided to go ahead and pick this blog, I was asked to put together a couple like talking points, because it's a different story. We're used to talking about dildos getting lost in your ass. Right. We're used to talking about other things on this blog.
Where's Jack?
So, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Where's Jack? But so I wanted to talk a little bit and dive in a little bit more. So drugs, do they actually make sex better?
100%.
How is the mind though? How in relation to sex? Like, what? Why is it? Why does it make it better? What happens in our mind to make it better? And then if you could talk a little bit about the client's first sober experience, and if he actually enjoyed sex, or if he's finding his way to enjoying sober sex.
Sure. So I am so not a drug doctor. So I you know, I'll answer as best as I possibly can, just from kind of seeing and reading and understanding. But I mean, I think drugs make everything better. Right. I mean, that's why people get addicted to it.
Right.
You know, and like today, you know, I just put someone under anesthesia and they woke up and they're like, I can understand why people get addicted to this. Right. I mean, it's just, it puts you into a completely euphoric state. And that is an interesting state. Now, I ask a lot of my clients why, from a meth perspective, I've never done meth. I've done other stuff. But from a meth perspective, like, what do you get on a sexual perspective that makes you keep going through it. First of all, most people can't even come on meth. Right. A lot of people, it takes hours and hours and hours, and like you're hard for a ridiculous amount of time, and now you're being penetrated for that amount of time. I think it's that loss of time, since, you know, that loss of time is an issue. I think having euphoria, the just that complete, you know, I don't know if you ever got anesthesia, but like there's a little brief period where you're cognizant and like you're, but yet you're fading out, and it's just that. Just amazing time, you know, where your senses are so heightened, where it puts you into this amazing state, right? Mm. But again, I think it's interesting because so many people will say that, like, it's not a physical addiction, right? This is a mental addiction. There are definitely drugs that are physically addicting, you need to go through. But a lot of it is. But I also talk about, like, when you're coming off of this, it's such a bad crash, you know, like what do people feel like, and what does, and it may be interesting for us, you know, to kind of take this conversation further and get somebody on the air, or, you know, get somebody to talk to that has had an addiction or is currently going through an addiction. I have a ton of clients who are currently still going through addiction, and we talk about it openly and try and figure out, like, what is that thing that just keeps you going into that world, right? But clearly, obviously, it's a really good thing, because if it wasn't good, people wouldn't be going in that world, right? You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And I think taking it to my client's first sober experience, I think realistically he hasn't even had that yet. He okay. can't even work himself up to that experience because of the issues associated with his addiction.
That's gonna be so rough on his relationship though.
Yeah, that's
totally. Totally. And I think that's why, you know, that's why I think in the beginning, when you're coming off the addiction, they tell you not to really get involved in relationship, mm-hmm. because there's so many things that you have to work through before you're able to tackle this.
Right.
And I think he's in a really, really good space to attempt to tackle that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, that was the concern that was going through my mind as we were discussing this, was that, you know, him wanting to engage in a healthy sexual experience where it doesn't involve drugs or meth could really trigger his addiction into wanting to go get it, because he still feels that he's not going to have the same sensation. And although now he knows that, you know, he's been clean for 2+ years and that he's making an effort to find a healthy sexual experience, that may be the one trigger that would make him go back.
Totally.
And so that could be holding him as well.
Absolutely. I mean, I think it's so multifaceted, and everybody's story is different. So it's really great to kind of hear many different stories. And I'm sure we'll hear from people that are out there now in terms of their addiction. It doesn't necessarily need to be crystal. It could be anything. Mm-hmm. But I think that, you know, it's so rampant in our community, specifically with parties and how people engage, and especially in the bottoming culture. You know, I see a ton of STDs. Obviously, there's HIV transmission. There's Jack being left in, right? There's so many different situations that are confounding variables when people are using this. But again, it winds up being, and I don't have an answer, is why is it so rampant? What are those feelings that people, what are these parties? You know, I don't even know how much it costs. You know, I ask in terms of, well, what does it cost for each trip? And why do you want to do this? And how many, and trying to set up a scenario where it's safe spaces, and it's really mind-boggling.
So it's interesting. So we're moving into this whole separate section of the conversation, which is really important as to why addiction, meth, alcohol, everything runs so rampant in the gay community, right? And I think for me personally, I've looked at my life, and I know that there have been times in my life where I felt so secluded and so alone, and I just wanted to escape it all, right? And so that's when you find yourself abusing drugs and alcohol and doing things like that. But I think that runs rampant in our community, and until we embrace ourselves and really try to find the true meaning of who we are and what it means for us to be gay and embrace that and be okay with that. And I think that has a lot to do with why in the gay community people abuse drugs, not to mention the fact that sometimes we need poppers, but poppers aren't necessarily as bad as meth.
But you also have to keep in mind too that as a community, especially in gay men, we're very open with sexuality, We're not afraid to explore it. We're not afraid to do it. So, you know, when you think about the correlation between drugs and sex, we're already a sexual community to begin with.
But there's also shame involved there too, right? Yeah. Because for a long time, a lot of people had to hide who mm-hmm. in fact, they were hooking up with, or if they wanted to go somewhere and hook up with somebody, they had to alter their state of mind so that they could actually engage in that activity.
Okay.
Yeah, no, I mean, no, 100%. I mean, I think it's the inhibitions, right? It's the internalized homophobia. It's like, you know, the discussions that we talk about of like what you and I and how we engage is wrong, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. And that wrongfulness translates to many different scenarios. I think also, obviously, a lot of it is, you know, from a hereditary perspective. And it's just so interesting because there are people that dabble in this shit and they have no inclination to do it further. They don't get addicted. They're able to control. And then there are sons of people that no matter what. And I thought it was quite interesting in the movie, which I read up more about it, was that, like, you know, the brain is just changed in morphology once you start using this drug, where it now just creates this self-fulfilling and self-defeating issue where now you can't stop, you know, and now it becomes a huge thing. I mean, I think, you know, especially as a father watching, you know, Timothy, you know, Chalamet's character just completely succumb to this was so heartbreaking for me, you know, and to think at some point that it could be, you know, my child. And we're going through some stuff now with Sebastian from a learning perspective that, like, I turned to Andy in this movie and I'm like, God, if you think we're going through hard times now, you just fucking wait. Like, you have no clue that this could potentially happen to someone, right? Someone, any one of us. And then as a father to say, I can't help you, like I can't take you in anymore. I mean, I think it's so multifactorial as to what puts somebody into this pathway. But what I also wanted to reflect on the tales was that, like, here's a guy who is like a 9-to-5 worker who totally has turned his life around for the better, yet is still missing this one piece that the drug replaced that piece. And now it's like, how do you bring that back for fruitful relationships moving forward for a 38-year-old guy, mm-hmm. you know, who has a whole life ahead of him?
Yeah, it's pretty intense. I mean, reading some of the stuff, you know, that was described in the movie, specifically on how not only does it affect the person that's using, but, you know, or the father, it affects his new relationship, his previous relationship, and everyone really involved in the situation gets drawn into this whole scenario. So how did you come across the movie?
You know, I knew that it came out, and I'm a fan of Timothy, especially after his last movie. So, I mean, I checked it out, and, you know, Andy couldn't even watch it, my partner. He was like, I can't believe you're watching this, just because it was so sad. There I am.
It was intense.
I'm so crying the entire time, and I'm like, oh, my God. but I thought it was such a great portrayal, because you never really see in a lot of these movies how it really truly affects the entire family and a community at large. And how do you kind of rebuild in a really, really amazing way to try and save this person, right? And that's what I'm doing. And that's what we're hopefully you're doing, you know, on Gay Talk by talking about this, is trying mm-hmm, to right. figure out how do we create safe spaces for people to talk about these issues? How do we now refer them to the right places? I know you asked me that question. So one of the things of, like, obviously there's really great places that do a lot of rehab stuff. So whether it's inpatient, whether it's outpatient, whether it's just meetings, whether it's creating a really safe space and sponsors to kind of walk people through the different processes. Obviously, every addiction is different. Mm-hmm. The addiction is treated one way for alcoholism versus the other from a meth perspective. Mm-hmm. And then also, you know, how do you walk away from a life with friends and family and whatnot that aren't really your friends and family, right? That are all based on the drug usage, and then change it to now put yourself into the right trajectory moving forward. You really need a lot of support and people that care for you.
You know, it's interesting. I'm thinking about the movie, and I'm thinking about the fact that there are moments in the movie where they actually sniff meth versus shooting meth. And I didn't realize that you could actually snort meth. Like, I thought you snort coke and you shoot up meth or heroin, right? So I think it's important to kind of hit on the point that you don't know what you're putting into your body sometimes. You know, you may be buying something that could be cocaine, because let's be honest, in the gay community, cocaine is, I mean, it's like snowing everywhere you go.
That's pretty much.
So when you put that in your body, I mean, I don't know.
It's a wonderland.
You said, you know, you're not a drug doctor, for example, but like, is there a percentage of like, am I actually doing coke? How do I know if I'm doing coke versus meth? I mean, what's the difference in meth versus coke? There's way more addictive properties in meth, correct?
Right. I mean, I think that one of the things that I think London and the UK does really well is that they do a lot of testing for people that even though they're engaged, they're using, that you're able to actually test certain things. Like there was a huge epidemic with E and toxicity in the UK. And then they basically started to put testing centers where you could bring your pills, no questions asked, and test it before you take it so that you understood the qualities and what was in it to make sure that you weren't doing the wrong thing. I think I still think it's even enacted now where a community looks and says, hey, you know what, this is really, really bad. How are we going to make sure that if people are doing it, that we're creating safe spaces, that the drugs are super clean, and that they have the support? And I think that that's kind of what we're trying to do in the United States and elsewhere. I think one of the things that we should probably just back up one second and just go over, because some people probably don't even know what Crystal does. Why don't I just read the four points that I said, because we're into a lot of conversation. But one of the things, you know, crystal meth is a stimulant that increases the release of dopamine and norepinephrine. Those are the brain's pleasures and alert chemicals. It increases energy. It prolongs sexual performance. It suppresses appetite and can also produce feelings of power, confidence, invulnerability, and intense sexual desire. The high can last about 8 to 12 hours and is followed by a period of depression, exhaustion, irritability, and paranoia, which can be quite debilitating. And then sex itself often becomes a trigger for crystal use, and it is so intense that many addicts fear that they'll never experience the same level of sexual pleasure sober. So, I mean, I think those points kind of look at where we are now with my client. And trying to figure out how can he salvage a relationship and make it fruitful for everybody. Also, obviously, his partner, which he wants to satisfy.
So you were working with a patient, obviously, to check his bum and make sure that everything was in good working order, because that was part of his way of making sure that he was.
Can I pause for a second? I just want to ask something, because those side effects sound very similar to like something like Adderall, which is prescribed to people take it all the time. What is the difference between taking something like Adderall that's prescribed to you versus taking meth? I mean, like, is it the same?
They're both stimulants, right? But in theory, from an Adderall perspective, the person, it's actually causing the opposite effect. So like one of my kids is on a stimulant for his ADD. Okay. In theory, in someone that is that hyperactive, that stimulant, that stimulation now allows them to concentrate and actually calm down and be able to control the body, right? So there's a little bit of this kind of opposite, you know, type of effect that's happening. Now, with that said, again, like you said before, you have no idea what the fuck you're putting in from a pure crystal perspective. Mm-hmm. What's in there? What are they using? What are the chemicals that are there? And obviously, in the run-of-the-mill, everybody that's not obviously an ADD issue, it winds up being exactly that, really stimulating those receptors a millionfold, not just, you know, a monitored metered dosing for the usual use of those stimulants. Does that make sense?
That makes complete sense. Yep. I'm sorry to interrupt. I just thought.
So the question that I had was, you know, you were working with this individual to make sure that his bum was in good working order, which was part of the steps that he was taking to make sure that if he was going to jump on board with having a healthy sexual relationship, that he was everything was working. But obviously there's a mental component about that. Do you work in conjunction with his other doctors to bounce back and forth and make sure that his path is the right one and that he's on his right, on the right track to a successful, healthy relationship? Do you get involved with any of that?
Yeah. So, you know, what I try and do is try and use toys and butt plugs and dildos and kind of set the stage for success. I obviously ask them if they want their boyfriend or their new partner to come on in, and we can kind of talk about these issues. Because I think, you know, it's obviously a therapy session, but I also think that for them to hear that, like, you know, especially from a top, you know, that you're not going to hurt him. There's nothing that's there that's going to prohibit just from enjoyment. You know, that now it's some work to, for you as the top, to kind of, you know, not only look at your pleasures, but try and really understand what he's going through, because clearly it's an emotional ride, and then really kind of understand and embrace that it's okay if he stops, right? It's okay if it's really too emotional that he can't. And that's one of the things about working towards toys. I'm a big toy proponent, but I think using the toys by himself to try and simulate to see, like, okay, wait, can I get pleasure out of this? What type of pleasure can I get? Can I come? You know, can I ejaculate while I'm playing? And, like, start testing the waters of really trying to feel like, okay, you know what? Like, maybe this position is a little bit more favorable for me. And then it's kind of like, I don't want sex to be methodical to the point where it's too scientific, right? Mm-hmm. But in the beginning, you need to set the success up, because if you set the success up, now he's like, oh, I fucking love that, right? I want that again, right? Okay, great. And then that becomes a drug in and of itself, which is like, I can feel that way from an anal perspective.
It's interesting. I didn't really even think about it, though. It's like this individual or individuals that are in circumstances like this, it's almost like when they were high, they didn't necessarily give a shit what they were doing because everything felt good. So now they're reevaluating what sex actually means completely. It's not just that they haven't had sex, because they have, but now they're looking at their body and saying, oh my God, this feels completely different. When I did this on meth, I didn't care that I had two cocks in my ass. Now I have two cocks in my ass and I'm screaming in pain. So, or whatever it is. So it's like,
some of them, they only know bottoming on meth. So you have to remember, a lot of these guys are these verse guys that for the most part didn't bottom because of, let's say, inhibitions or pain or whatnot, where now all of a sudden they find themselves in a situation where, you're right, where everything feels so amazing. Now, how do you come back into reality to say, okay, well, you know what? Bottoming could be amazing without drugs. And how do we kind of make that, you know, and I think that this is multifactorial too, because this is somebody that is looking for a relationship. Mm-hmm. And then, like, you know, how do you make relationships work? And sometimes it's not necessarily pleasure for you, it's for your partner. And so there's so many things that need to be in there, but it's also finding a partner that understands your past. And is not part of your past, because I think that that's also an inciting issue, right? But I think finding someone that is new and innovative and understanding, but also realizes the detriment that happened from its use, and how can you work towards a really fruitful engagement? And also, I think the communication of this engagement. And it doesn't necessarily need to be a play-by-play, but I think that what we're trying to do is to have this discussion that it is going to be a difficult situation. And it's not necessarily the top's fault in the situation of, because he's like, I want to jump on him. I love him. He's so adorable. His cock is beautiful. I mean, like, everything is there. You have the man of your dreams and you want to sit on him, yet mentally
you can't.
You can't, right?
And also the element, though, too, of, how do you have that conversation of, I was addicted to meth?
Right.
I mean, that in itself is a hard conversation to have when you're falling for somebody.
Well, that's the thing. You're literally trying to engage with someone with things that you have in the back of your head that are not only triggering an emotional response, it's triggering a physical response, And on top of the emotional and physical is also mental. So you're really like looking at one issue from three different perspectives and you really don't know where to go first.
Preach.
Yeah. You know, and again, I think that some of the things that we talked about is like, okay, well, do you have any friends with benefits or a friend that, that could be that person of support, but yet, you know, a trial to do this. Mm-hmm. So that's why we were using toys. Then we talked about, hey, okay, like instead of blowing your load the first time with this guy and it not being successful, you know, is it, do you do an intermediary? I mean, there's no right answer, but it's kind of discussing this so that at least we could come up with a situation that hopefully would be as successful as possible for him.
Right.
Well, the only thing I can say is just don't get discouraged. If you don't come the first time, there's always tomorrow. Or 2 hours from now. I mean, we're perfectly capable of coming multiple times in one day. It's just a matter of
being held up.
Trying. Just try.
So we have to wrap this up. I know we do, but I do want to take it back just a little bit. This story and that movie brought a lot to light for you, and we didn't really talk about your discussion as much as I would have liked to, but I would love for you to talk about when you were watching this movie, going through it now as a parent, a gay parent, how that affected you and how that's no different for heterosexual parents. I mean, the experience that you went through would be the same if you were straight or gay. And I just think it's important to acknowledge that as parents, we all have the same fears and we all love in the same way. And I would love if you wouldn't mind talking a little bit about that experience for you.
I think you said it so perfectly, right? I mean, I think, you know, when you wrote the questioning of like gay or straight or whatnot, I mean, I think you're right. I think one of the first things we look at is just from a parent perspective and that it actually means, you know, no difference in terms of from an upbringing perspective. But I think, you know, Andy and I are going through obviously things as a parent. And for me, it was, you know, there's always going to be issues surrounding our children, you know, no matter what, at every age, at every, you know, milestone that we're never going to be thinking, oh, we're going to get Sebastian on the right way from an education perspective right now and think that miraculously life is just going to be all hunky dory the rest. I said, you know, I thought it was so important for Andy and I to watch it, even though he said he didn't want to watch it and it was very difficult for him to watch. I made him watch it. Because I think, you know, seeing other parents go through situations really gives you a real good understanding as a parent of how would you handle that situation and how to kind of brace yourself for potentially situations like that to arise. You know, it's scary. It's totally scary, you know. And I mean, and, you know, at some point, you know, that scene when he just says, you know, and Timothy calls to ask for him to come home one last time. And he just says, no, you know, I can't. Can you imagine, like, how can you imagine, you know, Phoenix or Sebastian calling me and saying, sorry, you can't come home, you know, like time's up, you know, but it's not fair to the dad, right? It was not fair to him. Like, how much of life do you sacrifice or keep sacrificing to then be let down in this situation? And also to know your limits, right? As a father, that you can't tackle everything and that you should have. And that's what's so great about Andy is that I think I know everything. Andy doesn't. Andy's like, I'm going to find out. I'm going to actually figure out the right answer and speak to all the right people and make all the right appointments and whatnot. So, I mean, I think it's finding a parenting balance between the two partners to really play off of each other in a really, really great way to make sure that the kids, you know, are in a fruitful relationship and can grow up the best that they possibly can, but understand that it's life, you know, it's fucked up, I tell you, you know.
That it is.
Yeah.
It's so true. I mean, anyone that experiences addiction of any kind knows that when you're dealing with addiction in a family member, it is not the easiest thing to want to see, to experience, or go through. So.
And I just think it's so beautiful, you know, and it's funny because I didn't even think about it from this perspective until I read the blog and then I watched the movie. But the fears that every parent has of their child, the fears that my mom and dad had for me, they're no different for anybody. And there's so much beauty in the fact that we should be one group of people working together for a common cause instead of all of these segregated groups. So, like, you shouldn't be a gay parent. You're a fucking parent.
Right.
And I just thought that was such a beautiful point that just, like, kind of resonated with me, that you have the same fears that any other parent would.
Well, I appreciate that.
Sorry, I'm like getting a little, like, teary eyed over here.
I see that. Well, I mean,
do you want to be my daddy?
I'll be your daddy anytime.
Oh, please be mine too. Well, on that note, you know, it's just amazing. You know, this was definitely one of those, you know, heavier stories, but nonetheless an important one that we need to talk about, mm-hmm. you know. And so I want to thank you for joining us on today's episode and joining us for this month's Tales from Tale. And next month should be an interesting one because it's going to be...
If we can get Chris to freaking get his schedule online.
It's going to be one of our own... host that went to Dr. G and had a consultation with some personal things.
I have
that
so
happen,
much I want to say about that experience, and I just can't. Like, I've got to save it.
So on that note, Dr. G, I don't want to take any more of your time, but I do want to thank you for joining us, and I appreciate your efforts and your commitment to the show, and we love
yes,
you.
Yes, absolutely.
We absolutely love you.
All right, well, thank you so much, and I'm curious to see, remember, you know, you can follow us, Instagram, DM, talk about this. Obviously, you guys have your site. Let's talk about it. And obviously, if anyone can give us more insight into some of the addiction stuff, I think that would be great. And we should, if we get a good response, maybe we could revisit it specifically with some people to kind of really just give everybody a sense as to how big of an issue this is with our community, and to make sure that everybody understands where they can go to get help.
Yeah,
absolutely.
All right.
All right, guys.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Goldstein. It's been a pleasure, and we will see you again next month.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Well, Dr. G, as you well know, has been an amazing partner to us here on Gay Talk 2.0, and we're super appreciative because most of the information that we get from him is very informative for our listeners, and I think that, you know, it's just amazing.
Yeah, no, that was a heavy topic that we talked about today, and Chris wasn't with us during that time, but it was important that we talked about it, and
eye-opening too.
I hope that people can take something positive away from it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I agree. It was very eye-opening for me because, you know, you don't realize how affected you are by something and you start reading it on paper. And so, to me, that was where it hit home. But that's a story for another day. I think that we should start wrapping up the show. We've got a couple of more things that we're going to talk about briefly. As always, you know, we do two things that we love to do on this show. So I'm going to kick it off to my boys here and let them go ahead and do what they need to do. So who wants to go first?
I do. So actually, we're going to do something a little special today. And
I'm super excited.
And maybe continue it depending. So
Lord knows we have the material.
We do.
So as you know, we have a huge supporter of the show, Mama Kim.
That's right. Mama Kim!
And she gets on these roles where she sends us all of this information. And sometimes we talk about it on the show and mm-hmm. sometimes we can't. But this is going to be Mama Kim's minute.
So why don't you explain what you're about to do?
I'm going to go through every single email that she sent to us. I'm just going to give you, like, very brief highlights, and we're going to do it in about 60 seconds. So
I'm getting the timer ready now.
All right, so somebody's going to time me.
Getting ready. Ready when you are.
Tell me when you're ready.
And... go!
All right, so number one, happy birthday, Chris!
Yay!
Two, Hans, Mama Kim bought your book, so we'll find out if she liked it. Three, she reviewed the show, our show, with love.
Oh, you gotta hurry it up, girl.
Yeah.
Oh, Disneyland. I'm stressed out. Disneyland Paris will host its first ever official Pride event in June 2019. Five, Netflix, new reality dating TV show for LGBTQI couples. People of color are involved, which is amazing. Six, Kentucky mom honors 20-year-old son with stunning transgender reveal photos. Heather Lundberg Green staged the powerful shoot in hopes of supporting Adrian in his journey. Seven, bans on LGBTQ+ conversion therapy for minors are now under threat thanks to our Supreme Court. Planned Parenthood introduces a new program for gay men and trans people.
She's done. Isn't
so
she?
Close. Yeah. It's her first time, though.
I know. It was. It was a lot. I didn't realize 60 seconds. Trans people, American Sexual Health Behavior, Planned Parenthood has begun offering PrEP to gay men and hormone therapy for trans people. So these are all articles separate emails that were sent to us from Mama Kim. We will post them on our post tonight so you can read about the articles, because obviously I cannot give you the full scheme of what they're about.
It would go from 60 seconds to 60 minutes. Yep. And that show is already
that's taken.
But that was good. But the point about this is Mama Kim's minute is important, right? Because she's continually sending us really important information that needs to be shared with our listeners.
That's absolutely right. Amazing. So thank you, Mama Kim.
Thank you, Mama. And, love you.
I know that we mentioned it last... Let me see if I can grab one here. We mentioned it during our last episode, but Mama Kim sent us some Valentine's. She sent us a nice little card and some chocolate, which I will be biting into at some point because I'm getting hormonal soon.
So, honey, welcome to my life.
I'm going to need it, but thank you. Thank you, Mama Kim. We do appreciate everything that you do for us and for the show and for being so engaged. We're super appreciative. And I have to tell you, your son is one lucky man. He will be. You're an amazing mother.
So before we move on to like closing it out, can I read one email that Mama Kim sent us?
Go for it.
All right. So, hey guys, great show as always. You never fail to add a little spark to Matt otherwise rather mundane life. The book Golden One, Blooming, is amazing. I read it. And I read it every opportunity. I am looking forward to the next installment and haven't even finished the first one yet. Please give my compliments to Hans.
That's right. Yay, Hans.
Next time you talk to him. Well, we just did. Wow. Dragon dads, mermen, and dads in tutus dancing with their sons. It doesn't get much better than that. What an amazing example of supportive, wonderful fathers or dads. What a stark contrast to the so-called million moms doing so much damage to their wonderful children and those around them. Loved your talk with Larry Schmo. You were all so fun to listen to. Well, I guess Mama Kim will have to grab a seatbelt and listen to an episode of Filthy Animals. Yikes.
Oh, seatbelt is not what you're going to need.
Pepper
honey.
Spray, yeah. A muzzle,
some wipes,
a taser.
Just get some
a vomit
wipes.
Bag,
two new ears.
So yeah. Glad that you liked the little chocolate men I sent you. They made me smile when I saw them, and I thought of you guys. Have a great rest of your week and weekend. Love, Mama Kim. P.S. Tom. Are the plants okay that are behind you? They look a little dry.
Well, okay.
reminds me a lot of any plant that ends up in my house.
Okay. So I do need to say this. Oh, I should have stopped this a long time ago. 3 minutes.
Anyway. Nearly four.
Right? So I will have to say this. I have a green thumb. You can ask them. All my plants upstairs are alive and well, and they're amazingly beautiful. This down here is a hibiscus plant that typically would go outside.
There are leaves on the floor.
In the wintertime, all the leaves fall off and die, and I bring it inside because I don't want it to freeze and not come back up next spring. So when it starts getting warmer, typically in the 50s in the evenings and at night, I will bring it back outside. It will bloom again and it'll look pretty and beautiful. I just keep it indoors so that it doesn't actually die on me.
Maybe outside. We should just find a different plant that's in the view of the camera.
No, because it's just
it represents
there,
our life.
It's there as right? A reminder of what you represent for me. Decay.
Ooh.
Ouch.
And I meant that with a lot of love.
I don't know if you
I
did.
I don't think so.
You're making fun of my plant.
No, Mama Kim was. Mama Kim was calling out your plant.
I'm blaming
She was
it on
looking
him
out for your plant. She yeah. was worried of neglect.
Yeah.
No, I'm actually watering it.
She was going to call DPF.
Department of Plant and Services or something.
Family
like that?
Services, yeah.
Department yeah. of Plants and
Family Services.
And Forests. That's it. Yes, it's a new thing.
Yeah. No, and I have.
He's going to school for it. It's fine.
Oh Lord.
Donald Trump will probably have Rex Tillerson be the one in charge of it.
Mm. Oh God.
She's so good for the environment.
You guys are crazy, and I love it.
So that was your Mama Kim moment.
Yay, Mama Kim Min.
All right. Well, Mama Kim, thank you again. We love you. Thanks for that chocolate.
And poor Hans, with all the praise you were giving him, she's probably going to fall over on her treadmill tomorrow when she's running. If she's still not sliding on ice and snow in Switzerland.
Can we talk about the fact that he messaged us and he was like, oh, well, I thought I was going to get slammed. That was very nice, guys.
Everybody gets one.
I don't know if you guys caught it, but throughout the whole entire episode, as we were talking about the book, I just kept saying soggy balls. Just threw it in there.
I missed that.
Yeah, I missed that part, too. I was reading the whole...
I think he missed it, too. But, you know, Hans, I love you. I just like to break your balls. Anyway.
I was reading the Old Testament worth of text that he sent back in the next day on the group chat. I was like, I can never keep up with you, Hans, which is why I don't try to dig at you too much, because you'll come at me in a quite intellectual way that I can't comprehend.
But it was actually really sweet. He, one of the things that I said during the show... he actually quoted and like shared on his Facebook. And my favorite part, and he's going to slam me for saying this, was the fact that he said one of my favorite podcasts or my favorite gay podcast or something like that. He said something really amazing about our show. And I mean, he schools us a lot and tells us to fact check, but like it was really sweet.
No, he is. I mean, for the most part, all of our interactions with Hans have always been positive. He just likes to be a jokester, and he just, well, you and him
Me and Hans have a relationship.
And it's okay.
And he just won't be, you know, he won't be silenced, and sometimes Tom forgets to hit record, so it's like you're silencing him.
We talked about that earlier today, but yeah.
But anyway, so should we wrap it up, or are you trying to find something?
No, go ahead.
All right, so... this week's Gay Talk term, of course, brought to you by
UnicornBooty.com.
Not really.
Yes, it is.
No.
Is Mama Bear. So I picked this because we were talking about Mama Kim. It has nothing to do with her because Bear means a hairy-chested queen. Mama Bear is your Gay Talk term this week.
There it is.
So is Chris.
Christopher. Yeah.
Yes.
Go for it.
My turn?
Yes.
Okay. On this day in gay history, brought to you, of course, by
UnicornBooty.com.
Not really.
Who are we talking about? Karen Pence? Kind of, but not really. Okay, just another bitch that we wanted to talk about. So this is a very bad thing. So on this day in gay history, February 11th, 1977, we're in... the lovely state of Florida. Sorry for our Floridians listening. First Save Our Children press conference. Anita Bryant, and remember, cocktail, Anita Bryant cocktail, vodka, and apple juice. Enjoy it. Don't be drinking her OJ. Anita Bryant, founder of Save Our Children, gives her first press conference on behalf of the foundation. She claims she can prove that homosexuals are, quote, trying to recruit our children to homosexuality. Yeah, end quote. Well, she lost her job.
Well, true.
Mm. So that's on our day in gay history. Not always fun facts, but history.
History's
not always fun.
They're facts.
History's not always. It's like 75% of the time it's not fun. We have to learn from our history.
We learn from it.
True.
No, we don't. That's the problem.
Well, we have to. And we have to write it.
So,
crazy people. All right. Well, listen, guys, it is that time to say goodbye. So, if you love our show, make sure that you go rate and review our show on your favorite podcasting service. This will help others know about our show, and it ensures that it becomes more visible within our podcasting community. By subscribing to it, you get the latest and greatest delivered right to your favorite device or web browser of choice. And it is amazing. You can also support us on Patreon. Our apologies to our Patreon subscribers today, but the technicalities of how we were doing today's show was a little too much for me. So we couldn't actually live stream it, but we are going to be posting the video in its entirety after it's done being produced. So our apologies, but you can support us and get that live stream every week. Anyway, Christopher?
Actually, I'm going to take this one and Chris can read mine. So... because I didn't do my job. So next week, we actually don't have a guest. So next week is a holiday, and we will all be coming together. Maybe we'll have a lunch or a barbecue or something. Right. But we'll be doing another show for you. It'll be all about the dish next week.
That's right. We'll be producing some interesting stuff for our next month's one of our next month's episodes. We'll be taking the time, the fact that we're all off, to do that as well. So I'm super excited.
And maybe there'll be a surprise. Who knows?
Yeah, you never know.
We'll see. I might even show up. All righty. So
that'd be a surprise.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you to our guest, all Dr. three. Evan Goldstein. We love you. We love having you. And we love you that you came on for this month's Tales from the Tale. We will be sure to have all the links available for his website and social media on today's post.
That's amazing.
And Chris,
I kind of feel like I'm going to keep talking. So can we put a rubber on this?
Yes, please.
I'm just going to keep going. Right, yeah. All righty.
Go for it.
As always, our show is available on our website, gaytalk20.com, and our show and episodes. It is also available as a free download on iTunes, Google Play Music, and Stitcher Radio.
Nick announces you can find us on social media, Facebook, Gay Talk 2.0, Instagram, Gay Talk 2.0, Twitter, at Gay Talk 20. You can email us at gaytalk2.0@gmail.com. Tom, take it away.
And if you need to reach out to us, you can do so by visiting our website, clicking on the Contact Us tab right above on the web browser where you can leave comments, you can suggest topics, or submit a question for the cast or any of these two crazy hosts, because you know they're amazing. You can also call us and leave us a voice message with any questions you may have. We might answer them on the show for you. That phone number is 334-GAY-TALK, or if you need those numbers, it is 334-429-8255. Don't forget that we do stream live every Monday for the time being at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and you can access that live stream by visiting digitalstreamradio.com. Ladies and gentlemen, that is our show. Thank you, and y'all have a good night. Bye!
Thank you for listening to this episode of Gay Talk 2.0. Tune in next time for more dish. Bye.